I'm looking for Michael Scott.
Yes, right in here.
Good.
Come on in.
Great.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is our special guest.
Sorry I'm late. Somebody parked in the handicap parking space. Hey, everyone. I'm Billy Merchant. You may have seen me around here before. I'm the properties manager of this office park.
You are so brave. You are so brave.
Thank you. Actually, I've been meaning to come by here for a long time.
But it's hard for you, right? Because you're in a wheelchair.
No, I just have a lot of properties to manage.
Let me ask you something. How long does it take for you to do something simple every day, like brush your teeth in the morning?
I don't know, like 30 seconds?
Oh my God. That's three times as long as it takes me.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weissenick here with you once again. Before we get into it, we got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at NixRRS. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Gentlemen, Shedeur Sanders, New York football giant.
Before we get there, I want to congratulate.
Sorry, wait, is it April?
Antonio Pierce on a big win.
Before any of that, well, I want to congratulate the New York Giants owner John Mara, Steve Tisch, the Mara family, the Tisch family, on their record-breaking 10th straight loss that has seemingly been swept under the rug thanks to the draft talk and thanks to reporters sort of, you know, covering the team a little differently now that it's been, you know, fans are out for heads.
Okay, well, why don't we start there?
Sure.
Since you're diving right into it. Weiss, what did you notice differently about the post-game press conference yesterday for the New York Giants?
It just seems like we're living in two different worlds, right? Where if you read just what the stuff that's coming out from people that cover the team, you would think that all the Giants need is a quarterback and everything will be solved. And it's like, it's guaranteed that they're going to have the number one pick in the draft. It's guaranteed that the quarterback that they're going to select is automatically going to save this franchise in ways that Eli Manning couldn't even save this franchise in the back end of his career when he still had some leg left. And it is a bizarre world that we're living in right now. And in front of all that, or they're trying to hide the fact that this team is 2-13. They score one touchdown a game. They can barely score double digits. A baseball team has a better chance of scoring double digit runs, points, than the New York Giants do every single week for the last 8-10, however long this losing streak has been. The checklist has been the same. The game starts, Brian Daboll has his one like outburst on the sideline where he looks like he wants to go on a killing spree. Too soon, I know, but
word to friend of the show, Dan Duggan.
Yes.
All-time great tweets.
They get their 112 play, 47-yard drive that's extended by like four penalties and is a touchdown, right? That Tyrone Tracy makes one play that makes everyone like just automatically look past every other thing wrong with this roster. And now another thing is Malik Nabers weekly illegal formation or illegal shift penalty that he gets. Apparently that's a thing now. And it's the same thing every single week. But for some reason, we still are sitting here and saying that there is a good chance that this general manager is back. And we can take a deep dive into that in the show about how ludicrous that is and all the reasonings just don't make sense. And for the record, yes, I've changed my tone about this regime, because how I felt when they were 2-4 is a little bit different than how I feel now when they're what, 2-13. So That's my little opening monologue.
I think that, and I think that's fair because you need the third season to see how draft picks in season one and season two develop and how certain acquisitions, whether they be via trade or via free agency, mesh into the team and the structure and the scheme. Adding just to your little monologue wise, Malik Nabers with his, I believe, fifth illegal formation.
No other receiver has more than two in the league. He has five.
There it is. So, again, it would be nice if we had an offensive guru head coach who could help his six overall wide receiver work through these issues, or at least be a disciplinarian enough so that maybe after number two, number three, God forbid, number four, it doesn't happen again. But Weiss, what confuses me about the coverage of this team and general manager, just to put a bow on your thoughts, is it's tough to believe that some of these people who are reporting on the team believe what they're writing. And it makes you think, well, what are they getting in return for floating certain ideas from the team? And the answer generally is nothing. It's nothing.
Yeah.
So again, we've had these conversations in private. We've had them with certain people that cover the team. In my eyes, it is nonsensical. It doesn't make sense why you would sell out and put forward certain narratives about a team in exchange for very little, maybe nothing. Although I think that was put into a bit more of a clear picture with Pat Hanlon giving Bobby Skinner a call and saying, oh, we did you a favor. And said favor was quite literally just getting their press credential validated from like outdoors to indoors during a rainy practice.
It wasn't even that. They were able to stand on one side of the fence and not the other.
So again, like why anyone would do this organization favors in exchange for pissing off the fan base with coverage that is not objective, I do not understand why you would do that personally. So anyway, let's talk football. Brandon Brown was on the sidelines and Joe Shane was not in the suite. Maybe
speaking of ridiculous things that may or not, why can't we get an answer for simple things like that? That is something that is very easily verifiable.
And did kudos to me. I think that's like a great segue by me talking about certain folks pushing certain narratives, because PDOT Paul Dottino is out there with tweets saying that, well, actually, the Falcons didn't have a suite for Joe Shane. Well, John Mara, Chris Mara, and Tim McDonald were on TV in a suite.
A fucking nice suite, too. That was a nice
riddle suite. Me that.
That was a nice suite. They had some, those are some nice seats. I saw that. No, listen, it's not supposed to be a big deal, right? Like, you can just say, like, hey, they wanted to stay on the sideline. But the fact that you're lying, like, the Falcons probably offered him a box, but they wanted to stand on the sideline. What their reasoning is,
why wouldn't he just be with the owner and the VP of personnel?
Well, that's the thing. Like,
that's the thing. The Giants had a suite. If Joe Shane wanted to be in a suite, he could have been in a suite. It's not that they didn't have one for him. The New York Giants had a suite.
So I like, the Commanders owner stands on the sideline during the second half of games, of home games. So does Adam Peters, right? I've seen them do those.
Sure. The first ones
that come to mind. Like, it's not an uncommon thing. What's uncommon is the fact that the Giants are lying about it.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the whole reason why.
Arthur Blank himself is notorious for coming down from the suite too early and jinxing his team.
Exactly. And another thing is, every time, like, you know, the past couple of weeks, they've shown Joe Shane in his box, right? And who would be sitting next to him? It'd be Tim McDonald. Well, then
we're doing power struggle already. We're doing behind the scenes.
If they sit in the same box all season, why do they not sit in the same box in Atlanta? Someone's sleeping on the couch. Yeah. I mean, again, and Brian Daboll doesn't really help himself with the answers, but it's not really Brian Daboll to answer for this. I mean, it's at this point, like, it's not, what is the head coach going to say? But yeah, I mean, it's clear there seems to be issues. I don't think you get to where you are without having some fundamental issues. And I just think that I still have a tough time envisioning the owner doing the right thing and firing and cleaning house. And here's the crazy part about this, right? Like, I actually thought about this last night. Like, Ethan, we've spoke about this more earlier in the season about how I think John Mara is like a bad, and how his image around the league is going to be affected by this, regardless what happens. But this is the perfect time for him to clean house. This team has no sort of commitment to a quarterback whatsoever. They have no quarterback under roster under contract after this year. They have no like big decisions coming up with like key players. Like, there isn't a Saquon situation here, right? There's none of that. They have a clean cap space situation. They're going to have, or projected to have, the number one pick in the draft. And this is the absolute perfect time. What sets you back is like doing this whole half measure approach, and then GM spends money and new head coach, and it's like a bunch of pressure, and it creates a toxic situation. This is the absolute best time. No quarterback that you're tied to. No important players that are in line for a contract extension. You have the number one pick. You have $60 to $70 million in salary cap space. You bring in a general manager. I think the fan base overall understands that this team needs a lot of talent. Whatever they decide to do, whether it's, hey, we like one of these quarterbacks and we're going to take them, fine. We want to sell the pick for a haul because we need more assets to build the roster, fine. The point is, like, this is the absolute perfect time to do this. I don't want to be here. I'm not excited about this compared to years past, but it needs to be done. Like, this roster is horrible, and I keep hearing this argument, and I'm sort of guilty of it, because when the team was like 2-4 and 2-5, and it was clear that, you know, Daniel Jones was sort of letting them down. I mean, we watched games where players were open and they were leaving points on the board, right? It's like a completely different situation now. But yeah, I thought, okay, maybe a different quarterback gets a better results. And I still sort of feel that way. But look at the talent on this team. Look at, okay, he didn't get his own quarterback. He got his own defensive line. He got his own offensive line. He got his own secondary. Like, when Andrew Thomas went down, the offensive line fell apart, right? Well, what happened when Dexter Lawrence went down? What happened to the defensive line? Where's the pressure? Where are the sacks? Seems like Dexter Lawrence is the reason why Brian Burns, or a big reason why Brian Burns has 8.5 sacks. Like, he's not the impact player that you expect from a guy that you are paying $30 million a year to. Like, so don't say he deserves to pick his own quarterback when literally every other thing that he built.
He did pick his quarterback. He did.
But even if you come at me with the argument about he was stuck, and, well, what about all the other stuff that he picked?
Yeah.
Like he couldn't build a secondary. He couldn't build a defensive line. The offensive line, while better, is still not good enough based on the investments that he's made.
You aren't impressed with Evan Neal throwing it back?
I'm not impressed with him doing a cartwheel, no.
Evan Neal back shots.
You know? So it's like, hey, overlook all that. But he's earned the right to make a big investment in a quarterback. Just then, because, as Ethan says, they were in Buffalo when they got Josh Allen.
And on top of that, you're committing to him for at least another two seasons if you let him take another quarterback, which is another reason why you don't really want to do the half.
Or if you're not, is just another reason to clean house.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, to quote the great Phil Leotardo, you know, no more compromise. Okay. I've had enough fucking compromise. No more grilled cheese off the radiator. We are going to get out of this hellhole. No more fucking compromising. That's the reason we keep getting in these situations where we miss the good candidates by a year. We miss the good quarterbacks by a year. We always hold on to things for 1 year too long, and we throw ourselves off. All three of the quarterbacks who went 1-2-3 last year look pretty good. You know, May, for all of the problems that roster has.
I fucking love Drake May.
The talent is there. Daniels, he has things to work out, especially throwing between the numbers, but he looks like a guy. Caleb, I know that situation in Chicago is horrendous, but he looks like a guy. And our choices are Shador or Cam Ward. And again, I don't think putting either of those guys in this situation next year is going to make anyone happy. You know, if you start them right out of the gate behind this meh offensive line, sure, you probably can add a lineman or two in the draft. You can go out and get one in free agency, whatever. But if you are banking on the Giants nailing every single step of their offseason in hopes of having, you know, a 6-11 season next year with Shador or Cam Ward as the quarterback, are we really making progress? You know, is it realistic to say we're picking a quarterback first overall? He doesn't have any elite physical traits, so we need to put him in as ideal a situation as possible. And as we've seen, the Giants can't even build a mediocre team, let alone a perfect ideal situation. You know, that was the argument in defense of Jones for 6 years from the Jones cult was, well, he doesn't have any talent. It's a bad situation. What do you want him to do? If we take Shador, he's got good processing, but he's not a good athlete. He's not that fast. He's not that strong. He's not that big.
This is what drives me absolutely nuts, because you're basically like nailing my argument verbatim. Is I do not understand people who can argue that Shador is some elite athlete. He is not. Like, he is more akin to like Tua athleticism, or maybe slightly like a little bit more athletic than like Joe Burrow. You know, like people, and I'm not going to say why, but like, I feel like people overrate his athleticism. Like, he's just objectively, he is not fast. Like, I'm very curious how they're going to, I said this about Cam Ward months ago, and I believe the same to be true about Shador. Like, they are going to cook that man's 40 time so hard, so hard. Watching him, he is not fast. He's not quick. Like, yeah, he's got good pocket presence. Like, I'm not saying that the guy's a complete bust, but, and I tweeted this, a large majority, I'm not even going to try to put a percentage on it like I did on Twitter, a large percentage of my skepticism and hesitation for the Giants picking a quarterback that lacks the elite physical upside of that someone like Shador Sanders, that I believe lacks, as compared to last year, Caleb Williams, incredibly elusive, more athletic than he's probably given credit for, elite arm talent, elite. Okay. Drake May, physical freak. Jaden Daniels, so fucking fast. Like, these guys each have at least one area where you can say the physical upside is elite. And when you have that, you can make up for the lack of maybe coaching, the lack of an elite wide receiver.
That's not true.
Yes, it is.
Look at Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow does it every week. He makes up.
I can point to multiple quarterbacks that have elite traits, but they have completely busted out in this league.
And that's I'm not saying that every single one.
I got your point. I'm not done making it. But I've heard this. Okay, go ahead. Finish your point.
Thank you. Not every quarterback with elite physical traits is going to be an elite quarterback, but the chances of them being able to carry the deficiencies of your team are higher. That is the point. So when the New York Giants, who would take a quarterback and then double down, triple down, quadruple down, and refuse to believe that this guy is actually not the answer and that they did a bad job, if they, and like Nick pointed out, don't have good roster building talent and good scouting and can't put together a good coaching staff or a good roster, you're going to be picking a guy who I don't think can elevate the things around him sufficiently enough to make up for those, the dearth of talent, or, you know, they fire Dable and keep Shane. Who the fuck is going to want to coach this team? You know what I mean? So for me, like, yeah, last year I was tank because those guys I thought were elite prospects. I don't believe that about Shador. Do I think that he is the upside of someone like Tua? Sure, but Tua has Devon Achane. Tua's got Tyreek Hill. Tua's got Mike McDaniel calling the plays. Tua's got a lot of good around him that elevates him and can make that team competitive. And I don't believe the Giants have the ability to do that, which is a majority of my hesitation around just staying put and picking a quarterback in this class. Now, I've been wrong about quarterbacks before. I've been right about quarterbacks before. We spent pre-show talking about certain people's opinions and our opinions. And opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got them. you can choose to listen to us or not listen to us. I don't give a shit. But that is my opinion on the state of the Giants and why I'm hesitant on some of these quarterbacks. So, Nick, I'm sorry for running with your point, but we had the same point. So go ahead.
I want to add one more thing onto it before Weiss gives a rebuttal, because I think I know what Weiss is going to say, but I do want to add one more thing. It's not only that I am not entirely convinced about Ward or Sanders. It's also that the Giants have yet to show the ability to show any semblance of being able to evaluate the position correctly. That's my biggest, especially if Shane stays. If Shane stays, based on the way things have gone over the last 24 months at the quarterback position, I'm very hesitant that he's going to get the right quarterback. I don't think either Ward or Sanders kind of fits what they've done under Brian Daboll. But to your point, if Dable's not here, who's going to come in to coach? Now, if you're going to say, well, we have the first overall pick, we want to have your input, you know, which of the guys do you like better? You know, we can.
And again, I just want to interject, Nick, real quick. Like, that's not to say that we don't think that there's talent, that there aren't talented folks out there. It's who would want to come in here and coach for a guy who is on the hot seat.
It's a difficult job to walk into for the quarterback too. And that's part of the reason I'm very apprehensive of, he's not a lame duck general manager, but extremely hot seat general manager, where if the quarterback doesn't work out within 2 years, we're starting all over again. And that's really my concern. And it sucks that this is the draft class this year. There's not a ton of value. It's not an opportunity where even if you pick first overall, you're going to have people clamoring to trade up to first overall to get the massive package back, because there isn't a Drake May, there isn't a Jaden Daniels. Sure, maybe you could game Tom Telesco because he's an idiot, the Raiders general manager, or you could game somebody like Jacksonville because Trent Baalke is an idiot. But is Jacksonville trading up for Travis Hunter?
Well, here's the thing. Just let me throw this out there. Maybe a little three-way between the Giants, the Patriots, and the Raiders. No takers.
It's not out of the question.
I haven't workshopped it. It's just something that popped into my head. Like, Giants move back one spot, Raiders jump up to one, Patriots go back to like 7, 8, 9, wherever, you know, they are, some sort of asset swap, but whatever. But yeah. And like, I don't know, Weiss, I think your entire point was like, just because they have physical traits doesn't mean that they're automatically going to be able to lift up everyone around them. And I agree with that. Like, that it doesn't.
We see Anthony Richardson. We see Zach Wilson.
Right.
We understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I just think that, again, we'll talk, well, there's going to be a lot of time to talk about the quarterbacks, but I think you're painting these quarterbacks out to be something that they're not. Their traits are good enough. Like, Shador,
but you don't
Sanders
want good is, enough first overall.
But time out. But here's the thing, Nick. Like, when you're
do you building, want Jared Goff first overall?
But the draft, like, but the draft is not. Well, here's the thing about Jared Goff. Jared Goff went first overall, and some of that was because of his traits. Like, they liked a lot of his traits. So they're a part of it.
Jared Goff went first overall because of a weak-ass class.
Yes.
I don't remember 2016 being a weak class. I remember two teams moving up to grab a quarterback because there wasn't a lot of options.
San Francisco moved up for Trey Lance.
But Goff went.
And the Jets stayed at 2 and took Zach Wilson. I mean, I'm not trying to make this... I believe, and again, opinions are like assholes. I haven't watched Cam Ward outside of watching Miami on Saturdays to generate an opinion on him enough. I think he's a very polarizing player in terms of his off on the field performance. So you have to watch more. I have to watch more to really gain an opinion. But I have religiously watched Colorado and Jackson State, and I'm not a fan of like Colorado or Jackson State that I root for them. But when I watch Shador Sanders, I see a guy that physically, mentally can play the game. I think there's an emotional side of it that's what the offseason is going to answer. But I think he's very much worthy of being the number one pick in the draft. And I don't consider it a reach like Daniel Jones was a reach. I think he's worthy of it. I think the on-field production is there. I think the physical traits are there. He's not a tweener. I mean, I don't know. I don't have his measurements here, but he doesn't look undersized at the position, both from a height perspective and a weight perspective. I think he moves.
He's like an inch shorter and a few pounds lighter than J.J. McCarthy. and he's not as fast, and he doesn't have as strong of an arm.
Actually, I would disagree. I do think he has as strong of an arm.
Not based on the velocity figures that I Googled on Shador, but we'll see at the combine or pro day.
I don't really put much stock into the combine either. I don't expect these guys to throw at the combine. Did McCarthy throw at the combine?
Yeah, pro day, I think.
Pro day.
I think, yeah.
I just think he's worthy. But again, there'll be plenty of time to talk about it. My whole gist of my point was, and to push back on some of what you guys said, I don't care. I don't look at it and say, I don't want my team drafting person A because the history of the GM picking. Like, these are independent.
I also don't want to settle. You know, we talked about this a lot.
It's not settling. I think he's worthy of the number one pick in the draft.
I don't love either of these guys. That's the thing.
That's fine. You don't have to love them. But in terms of the prospect, like, they're worthy of being. Like, last year, Michael Penix, in my opinion, was not somebody that I would have taken in the top 10. I like Michael Penix, the prospect, but I wouldn't have taken him in the top 10. I liked J.J. McCarthy as a prospect. There's also some stuff I didn't like about him, but I wouldn't have taken him in the top 10. Same thing with Bo Nix. I didn't like him as much, but I wouldn't have taken him in the top 10 or the first round. So you can like a prospect, but say, hey, this guy is probably not worth, you know, pick X, Y, and Z. I wasn't as big of a fan as everyone else was of, you know, Trey Lance and Zach Wilson. But I thought they were prospects worthy enough of being taken in the top five. I wasn't a fan. Like, I liked Mac Jones, believe it or not. I will admit that. I thought he should have been the third quarterback taken. My point is that what you like is just separate from, is this person worthy of taking a swing on? You can't just simply say, well, this guy doesn't have the physical traits of this super elite athlete, so I'm not going to take him. Josh Allen is one of the
Again,
best.
Again, your logic is okay, but here's the thing. In a bubble, your logic is perfectly sound. The Giants do not operate in that bubble. And again, that's how I started off my take on these quarterbacks. Is in that bubble, okay, yeah, Shador is worth taking a swing on. I can say with 95% confidence that if they took a swing on Shador Sanders and he had, like, let's say they won 4 or 5 games his rookie season, and then his sophomore year, they wound up with like a top 3 pick. The Giants are not moving off of Shador Sanders.
But that these are all hypothetical situations that
you're yeah, it's hypothetical. You 2 years really from now, think, we might be dead. Based on the what Giants if, man. History.
We're doing what if, man. Yeah. Someone invite Justin Herbert.
I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, history has shown that they're overly committed to quarterbacks and keep people that are bad at
overly committed to not just quarterbacks, I know, general managers.
But as someone that's living in the moment, that's not deterring me from wanting to take a swing. And I don't want to summarize as taking a swing. That doesn't deter me from drafting a quarterback that I think is worthy enough to be the number one pick or number two pick in the draft.
I'll say this. I don't think Shador is worthy of first overall. I don't think physically, I don't think he's impressive. I am going to reserve judgment on whether or not I think the Giants should swing on him until after we know whether or not Joe Shane is the general manager for next year.
I think that matters almost as much as who they take. You know, yeah. I don't have that much of a strong preference between Shador or Ward. It matters to me a whole of a hell lot more who the general manager and the coach are than which of the quarterbacks they like more. That ultimately, you know, we talk about it all the time. Environment matters almost as much as talent.
Especially when it comes to quarterbacks. So let's talk about that for a little bit. So Joe Shane.
Yeah.
Let's go around the room here and get a little temperature check, because you listen to like the Dan Duggins. It's like, yeah, I get what the narrative is, but the results are maybe the worst they could possibly be. versus what is Paul Schwartz and what is Art Stapleton writing?
I think this season has embarrassed John Mara more than he's ever been embarrassed as an owner.
100th season, man. Celebration.
We saw it on TV.
Yeah.
When they went to the owner's box.
Some warranted, some not warranted. Actually, all of it's warranted. Who cares, right, at this point? John Mara can't turn on an NFL game without them mentioning the fact that they let Saquon go to their arch rivals. And he's, you know, is he on his way to breaking the rushing record or near it or whatever? He can't live through that. He's living through that right now. He's living through the fact that in his 100th year anniversary, his Giants have lost a record-breaking 10 straight games. They're winless at home. There's multiple planes flying over demanding that he makes change. Could be another one in the final home game. We'll see. The weather permits. I just feel like I don't understand how this owner can then forget about selling it on his fan base. How can he sell it on himself other than the fact that he is using something that doesn't even matter? For example, I try to think about this, like in his mind, he's thinking in 2006 when we started 6-0 or 5-0 and we ended up 8-8 and lost in the first round. And so many people were demanding that I fire Tom Coughlin and I stuck with him. And look at what happened.
You saw Ian O'Connell doing that with Dable with friggin' Parcells the other day on Twitter. Like,
so is that what's going through his mind? I'm not going to call him a cheap owner and say, I think because of the money he's
invested. No, I don't think it's that. The Giants always spend to the cap. I don't think it's that.
I do think he genuinely wants to win games. I just think he's too committed to people that he hires.
He's too nice a guy. It's a legitimate complaint. He's too nice.
And that's what's happening. And then another fear of mine is that the structure of that ownership, there's multiple people with their hands in the cookie jar. And I'm not just talking about Steve Tisch.
The Giants have lost 10 games in a row.
And the Tisch family own the Giants. The Mara and the Tisch family. John Mara sits at the head of the household, but that's all I can say. I just can't envision a scenario where at the end of the season, John Mara stands at a microphone and explains why he's firing one and not the other. I can't envision that in my mind based on what I see on Sundays every week. But for some reason, I just think that's exactly what's going to happen.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Yeah, I mean, we're watching like a hybrid version of that happen in Chicago.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Nick.
The question I have for you is, do you think this is genuinely like he's too nice, he doesn't understand, blah, 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 he's too loyal to people because, you know, whatever, trying to carry on his father's legacy of distinguished gentleman in football, whatever? Or do you genuinely think he's a dumb person? Because it's one of those two things.
I don't think he's dumb. I don't think he's delusional about his organization right now.
Okay.
You know?
Wouldn't it require a degree of delusion to seriously consider keeping Shane? Or do you think that's emotional?
I'll tell you where the delusion is. The delusion is his confidence in Joe.
Okay.
Shane.
That's understand.
That's where the delusion is. If you have a conversation with John Mara and you ask him where are the good players on this roster, he's not going to start naming guys that aren't good players. I just think his delusion stems from the fact that he's overly confident in the general manager who's been objectively bad.
It's a good question. I don't know. I really don't. Like, we got such a good glimpse of the emotion during Hard Knocks, especially when it came to Saquon. It's tough. Yes, he knows he needs to do something and that what he's doing isn't working. I don't think he is smart enough to figure out what needs to be done. I'll say that.
I mean, it feels like they need and I know obviously it's not working great in Chicago with Warren as the president of football, but like, kind of feels like that's what the Giants need. It feels like they need a real buffer between ownership and the football decisions.
They do.
Working for Stan Kroenke.
It's an important distinction to make because you don't want nepotism people in your football decisions. You don't. And there is always going to be a stench of nepotism in the front office. And we're all going to be skeptical of it. You know, when we're talking about McDonald and we're talking about Chris Mara, you know, there's always going to be a level of skepticism in their decision making purely because they're related to the family of the ownership. They are family of the ownership. So when you have that in conjunction with the owner not really being trusted by the public anymore, you know, it becomes a real untenable situation. And it sucks to have to dedicate this much time to talking about not on the field stuff, but you can't get the on the field stuff right until this is right. And that kind of feels like the story of the last 2 or 3 years is they went outside their comfort zone. They brought in people from outside the organization, no pre-existing connections, and it's blown up in their faces epically, even though, you know, we were relatively confident in the decisions that were being made at the time. It's just, they haven't worked. You know, they took the consensus best tackle in a draft. He's unplayable. They took the consensus best pass rusher in their draft. He's a rotation guy, 6 or 7 sacks a year. Fine. They don't have a whole lot to show for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Like the roster is downright atrocious.
It's awful.
So I don't know how you justify bringing this guy back, but the ownership has done it before. I mean, I really don't know what else to say.
Yeah. That's the most troubling part. Like I said it earlier in the show, like, I feel like this is the best time to do it. It's probably not what you want to do, but like, it's
the especially
best
because you have the allure of a number one overall pick. Like, it's real. It would be so tough to just run this shit back. Let's say they get like the 7th or 8th pick next year and they still need a quarterback.
And their salary cap situation is in a very bad spot because
because you have a desperate GM on the hot seat who, I mean, he's already spent, but now's the time. Like, you have the allure of that number one overall pick where I genuinely think that that's sort of like a throw everything out the window type enticement. Like, yeah, they've fired a million people. Yeah, it's been the worst organization over the last decade. Yeah, this, yeah, that. Yeah, the stadium looks disgusting, but I have the number one overall pick and I get to choose my own coach. That's enticing. That's enticing. It's now or never.
But what's not enticing, and this is what they have to fix, is how they run the football organization.
Yeah, but you know what? That's for the GM candidate to come in and see what the deal is.
It shouldn't be a prerequisite that you have to get along with the nephew.
Agreed.
No, 100%. 100%. It's not a tenable situation. You know, you're going to limit the candidates you can bring in when you have that problem. You know, what do we always say? What's the first step to solving a problem is admitting there's a problem. The Giants need to admit there's a problem.
When you did you guys see him in the clip when Fox put the cameras on him yesterday? Did you see that?
Who, John?
Yeah, Mara.
Yeah.
You saw that, right? Do you think that he was mad that he was on camera after that graphic?
Yes.
Or, yeah, that's why I think his anger.
That's the vibe I was getting. It was just like, really, you're going to do that? You're going to do me like that?
I actually felt bad for the guy when they did that. Because, like, he's not done a good job, right? Like, they're obviously, the way he's owning the team sucks. But I don't think John Mara doesn't care.
I think he cares too much. I think we agree that's the issue.
Yeah.
Right. So he had a nice vest on. That was a nice vest. I'm a big vest guy, so I know a good vest when I see one. But I wanted to ask you guys this, and I wanted to get your take. This is the worst outright record in the NFL since 1966 for the Giants. Winless at home, the last time was 1974. They've never been winless in the division, and the last time they held the number one pick in the draft was 1965. It's been a decade of losing, decade plus of losing. we're three of us are still fairly young. Nick's still a young pup, but Ethan, you and I are kind of graduated to parenting, so kind of getting some white hairs. But anyways, is this the worst Giants season that you've been a part of?
Yes.
Because it's hopeless, that's why. Because, like, at least some of the other shitty seasons, you know, like 2019 was probably the worst before this year, but like there is so much wrong with this team now.
2019, they had a young quarterback
that right,
had
a pretty exactly
rookie year that you could build off of.
Right. Now it's like, I hate the GM. They're definitely firing the coach. The offensive coordinator doesn't want to be here. The defensive coordinator is someone that no one wanted. Then you have the fact that they are going to have the first overall pick the year after they had a historically good or let's say high upside class.
2018 or 2021 draft class.
What do you mean?
Everyone talks about last year, 2021 and how 2023. I was watching Baker Mayfield yesterday.
Dude, the 2018 class has turned out to be even better, I think, than people thought over time.
Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson.
Like, of the first round quarterbacks, who are the ones that didn't work out? Josh Rosen.
Yeah. And that's it, right?
That's it. So everyone else is like a top 10 starter in the league right now.
You know what the crazy part is? The Giants had the chance to draft three of those guys.
Yes.
Last year, they didn't have a chance to draft those top three guys.
That's fine. But like, again, when you're looking back at it, like, it took, like, Baker was almost toast.
Like, he was real. Still bites at me more than
what
last year. 2018 still bites at me more than 2023.
Okay, but it's still early for 2023.
No, I know. But like, I'm going on the premise that the three guys,
I get it,
become stars in this league. Like, I think they will, all three of them.
Yeah.
2018 still, because we had the opportunity to pick one of, like, we had the opportunity to get Lamar. We had the opportunity Josh Allen. We had the opportunity to get Sam Darnold.
And
we
they actually had the opportunity to get both Saquon and Lamar.
Yeah, but that's a different discussion for another day.
Yeah.
So, Nick, worst year?
It's in the discussion. I think it has to be because of how, like, dire everything feels. Because, like, we're, like, 3 years away from being a year away. And that was supposed to be this year, you know?
Yeah.
We've done 3 years of hard time. It was supposed to be at this point that the foundation of a consistent team was put together. And we got a sugar high.
Think about it this way, right? Like, my expectation for this season was just progress.
Yeah.
Like, I understand where we want to be at, win me 7 or 8 games, then go out and get me a quarterback. And like, I think like we're fine. We're on the right track.
Yeah.
Right. The hope was average. The hope was mediocrity. Juxtapose that against the Jets, who were effectively Super Bowl or bust coming into the season. Like, I think I'd rather be in those shoes, like having that expectation and getting shit on, because like, at least I had a high bar.
You had some self-respect. You know, we were just hoping to not be ass.
Right. And it turns out that we are actually like worse than ass. We're like diarrhea in a porta potty ass. We have legitimate dumpster fires at our tailgate ass. We are hoping that it doesn't rain for the last home game so that a third airplane can fly over the stadium type
ass. At least a third, if not fourth. Shit, you might get two
or fifth or sixth or seventh type ass. Like, that is how ass the Giants are.
And that's the thing. The bar was so low, right?
Right.
We weren't asking for a lot, you know.
Bro, I tweeted before the season. I was so confident. I was like, the Giants are going to win 7 or 8 games. They're going to go out and get a quarterback. And then next year is just going to be so fun.
My whole thing was, hey, I don't care about who you didn't draft or who you let go. I'm judging you on your roster.
Progress. Yeah.
And then, yeah, like, I was pissed about how they handled the quarterback situation, which, by the way, Ethan, if we're, never mind, I'm not going to say that, but I was always okay with passing on a quarterback. I still am okay with their decision to pass on a quarterback. I judge them based on the players that they brought in. I thought the handling of the quarterback position was bad. I said it in March. I said it in April. I said it in July. I said it in September. And I said it in November when they benched Daniel Jones. Everything I said about the quarterback position played out exactly how I thought it was going to play out. Just a tad bit more embarrassing.
That's part of the, to me, that's like, again, like,
all you have like to
do. How close we were. They liked Caleb Williams. They liked Drake May. They liked Jaden Daniels. They tried to draft those three players. They couldn't. And then turn around and somehow evaluate Drew Lock as a good enough backup. Like that, it's mind-blowing to me how you could go from being so right to so wrong.
These things will eventually come out depending on what happens at the end of this year. I'm very confident they will. But they wanted to bring back Tyrod Taylor. They did. That was their first option. Ask yourself how they ruined the relationship so much with Tyrod that he left. He left and went to be Aaron Rodgers' backup quarterback.
Visual meme. I'm doing the Italian-American hand meme.
There's probably, it's not just the fact that they played the lesser of the two quarterbacks. Sure, there was a lot of stuff they said to him that ended up not happening.
Well, they've lied to every single fucking player.
And eventually it'll come out. But my point is that just,
I'll say this. I know that players do not like Dable.
Oh yeah. That's obvious.
Not shocking.
That's obvious. I also know like Dave Gettleman wasn't a good GM because he didn't know how to have relationships with players.
Sure.
I think these guys have ruined more relationships with,
it's certainly possible,
current and former Giant players than Gettleman did
in a shorter amount of time.
And that's not an endorsement for Dave Gettleman. That's just illustrating how in over their head they were with some of these things.
Correct.
So one day it'll come out. I'm pretty certain it will. I don't know when that day will be, but when it does, everyone will see how bad it got here.
I hope so. All right. Anything else?
No. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah.
Although we'll have an episode out before New Year's, but
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's it for this week. Ethan GSN, NYG Daily, Nick Zeraris, Gotham SN, subscribe. Talk to you guys soon.
Peace.